tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla, the final Q&A with Layla for the month of September. And just to remind you, Layla Mutin is my good colleague at the Hoffman Center. We've worked together for over 10 years. She is Hoffman Center nutritionist and registered dietitian, and also has earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. We see patients together. Each patient who sees me necessarily gets a consult with Layla, because there is no question that is outside the scope of nutrition. So we make it mandatory at the Hoffman Center, and it's included in the freight, in the overall cost of a visit to the Hoffman Center. Also, she has her own practice at the Hoffman Center, where if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor and you can see her for a nutritional consultation. It's an economical way to access the information that we've accumulated at the Hoffman Center, working directly with Layla. And you can do so from wherever you are, across the country, around the world. She is happy to consult with you. So check out drhoffman.com for information. All right. The next question this week is...
Yes. Is from Gary. And Gary writes, can you speak to the utility of soy isoflavones for prostate health? Some talk about soy isoflavones for lowering PSA and being protective against prostate cancer, but these benefits seem to be tempered with concerns about lowering testosterone and stimulating male breast tissue. Mm-hmm. What do you say to this?
Okay, well, let's look at this. Yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, we have questions often about soy isoflavones or eating soy and breast cancer. And, you know, let's just review that. When it comes to breast cancer, there's some evidence that not only is soy not, and soy is estrogenic, but a lot of the drugs that are used to treat breast cancer, like tamoxifen and Avista, are estrogenic. They're what are called selective estrogen receptor modulators, or SERMs. And it appears that soy, to some extent, is a SERM. It's got estrogenic effects. And as a result, it can alleviate hot flashes, just like hormone replacement therapy. But it also seems to put a block on the receptors in the breast so that the body's own estrogen doesn't stimulate growth. So in studies of the Chinese, for example, women who've had breast cancer, they found that women who consume soy do not have an increased risk of breast cancer recurrence. In fact, they have a slightly lower risk of breast cancer recurrence.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The problem with that is it's a Chinese population. It's women who probably have had soy through their lifetimes, and they're consuming dietary soy, and they're not consuming concentrated soy isoflavones. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're actually, I don't want to dwell too much on that because the question's about men. When it comes to men, there's actually evidence through an sort of an accident. There was a supplement on the market that was purported to be an herbal product for prostate cancer. I don't know if you remember this, Layla, but the product turned out to have a powerful estrogen in it. It came from China, and as a result, it was taken off the market. But it worked. It worked against prostate cancer, and it actually caused men to have reduced PSAs, prolonged survivals, but ultimately, because it was a misbranded herbal supplement, it was taken off the market. In the past, men have been given estrogen for prostate cancer with good results, but the side effects are that they get, you know, saggy breasts, they get gynecomastia, and that ain't good. And yes, there is suppression of testosterone. Will this happen with soy? Well, to a minor extent, it may happen with soy. men who consume lots of refined genistein, you know, or you know, these soy isoflavones, report that they might get breast tenderness or breast enlargement, but there may be a benefit in terms of prostate cancer. So, you know,
is
there a trade-off? There's, and so actually, I am more gung-ho about giving soy to men with prostate cancer than women with breast cancer. I think women with breast cancer, we allow them to have soy, but it's not, you know, we don't want to have tons of soy. There are other substances in soy which are anti-cancer. There are tyrosinase inhibitors which have a cancer preventive effect that's completely different than the hormonal effect. So soy may be an anti-cancer food even in non-hormonal cancers. So, you know, that's the story with prostate cancer. I recently did an article on prostate cancer. With you know, a series of recommendations about supplements to take, and I believe that, you know, soy was among the supplements that could be utilized in prostate cancer. Check it out at drhoffman.com.
Yeah, I guess then the thing to do if Gary's concerned about lowering testosterone is to get your testosterone checked. I mean, for the man who hasn't had prostate cancer but is, wants to be proactive in preventing it, maybe because of a strong family history, can take a soy supplement and at the same time periodically get his testosterone checked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I doubt that there's going to be much of an effect. I think that, you know, we tend to, in the, we who are sort of in this dietary game, we tend to exaggerate not only perhaps the good benefits of certain foods and supplements, but also the potential for harm. And so these are neither miracle cures, nor are they deadly poisons. And we kind of have to take a moderate approach to the effect, especially of dietary soy. You know, maybe concentrated soy supplements have a stronger effect.
Right, right. And if dietary soy, there's the question of GMO, which is a whole other a whole other topic.
But we have a question about that coming up, don't we?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, we have a question. I don't have a name, but here's the question.
Yep.
I've heard on a radio commercial that CoQ10 and lycopene are GMO, derived from genetically modified organisms. Is this true?
Yeah, I actually...
I suppose it can be.
I know what she's talking about because I listened to the very same radio station that carries my program carries a commercial. I won't mention the name of the product, but it's basically a fruit and vegetable concoction, you know, sort of like a freeze-dried or powdered fruit and vegetable mix that purports to be, you know, beneficial for, you know, a variety of things. And, hey, you know, there's no question that eating fruits and vegetables it has health benefits. It's no question. By inference, you could say that people who don't consume enough fruits and vegetables may gain some of the benefits by taking extracts of fruits and vegetables. But I have to say that some of the claims for this product are verging on, you know, FDA and FTC violations, because they have people with you know, serious medical illnesses saying, you know, since I took this, my this, that, the other thing disappeared, you know, and they're talking serious diseases, cancer, hepatitis, and I wonder it, you know, how they can put this on the radio in a current climate where you can't make disease claims about supplements. But, you know, maybe they're just playing whack-a-mole with the FDA. They know the FDA is too busy to, you know, come after everyone, so they'll do it until they get a speeding ticket. So then the person who they do, you know, sort of medical minutes, like informational minutes, and most of them, you know, are unobjectionable. They say that fruits and vegetables are beneficial. Great, you know, that's really important message to get out to the public. But then in one commercial, the guy disparages vitamins, and he says that you should, and now you see a little bit of self-interest creeping in, because he's saying don't take vitamins, but take basically natural fruit and veggie extracts because they're, quote, natural. Well, vitamins also are natural, but the point he's making in this one-minute expose is that supplements are artificial. And he targets coenzyme Q10 and lycopene. And he says, and this is where he gets fast and loose with the facts, he says that they're GMO. And the truth of the matter is that lycopene is not GMO. Coenzyme Q10 is not GMO. The way coenzyme Q10 is made, it's made via microorganisms that are bred, not GMO, not genetically modified, but bred to manufacture coenzyme Q10. So you could say, by a stretch, that they are artificial. Yeah, okay, I get it. You know, artificial, but they are not genetically modified in the way that we genetically modify corn or rapeseed or soy. You know, in the industrial marketplace, where it's a process where we endow them with resistance to Roundup and things like that. You know, where right. That's where a whole different ball of wax. Lycopene too is bred. They've created a technology which is a lycopene rich tomato. It's a technology, and you know, you could say, well, those are not natural tomatoes like you'd find in a wild tomato orchard, but they're the product of exquisite breeding a patented process by the Israelis to come up with a lycopene rich tomato, which then can be crushed and the lycopene can be extracted. I think that's the way they're getting lycopene these days. So, you know, I think what he's trying to do is disparage supplements, but you know, there's plenty of research that says that CoQ10 and lycopene has benefits, and merely because we have developed an industrial process to get them. You know, the original way they got CoQ10 was from beef hearts.
Yeah.
You know, heart is a very metabolically active organ, and so the original research on CoQ10 was ground up beef hearts. But that's not a really practical way or humane way to get our CoQ10. So the Japanese, in their ingenuity, have developed a way to create kind of a fermenting vat full of CoQ10 producing, I don't know whether it's yeast or some microorganisms that just make it.
That produce the CoQ10.
Yeah, and so
that's a much better way to receive it. Yeah,
it's a technology, but it really, formally speaking, is you can't really call that genetically modified. And
no.
You know, and it's like
not like taking, you know, it's not like taking the DNA from one completely different species,
right,
and injecting it into a plant.
And it's that's the tenor of this conversation. Is I'm not saying that mm-hmm. the stuff that they're advertising is crap. You know, mm-hmm. There's clearly, for especially people who don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, there may be benefits to taking a powder version concentrate of fruits and vegetables. Now, it's not the same as eating the full fruit and vegetable
right.
with the fiber and the live enzymes, and you know, you lose something in the dehydration process, no question. But I'm not saying that product is a, you know, but conversely, here's a guy who's trying to cast aspersions on the vitamin and supplement industry, and I think he should.
Right.
And I hope that it gets back to him that people like me are we're cognizant of his efforts, and if his efforts are constructive, great. And if his efforts are destructive, and he's trying to impugn what he views as competitors in this industry, he's going to get some blowback and some truth telling. And that's what I'm expressing here.
Well, you know, I have a problem with whole food supplements like greens powders and things like that. And a lot of my colleagues agree with this.
Yeah. Tell me what your concern is.
Supplements is people can be allergic.
Okay.
They could be allergic to a particular food that's in there. And that's why I rarely recommend whole food supplements for this reason.
In other words, there's so many different things together you don't know, right?
Yeah.
Here's another one. You know, there's another thing about green smoothies and kale smoothies, and, you know, sometimes people put powders in there. These powders sometimes are relatively high in oxalic acid. And oxalic acid is a problem for some people. It causes kidney stones. It can also cause joint pain. And we know that high oxalic acid sometimes irritates the bladder. And so some people don't do well with high oxalic acid. Now, I'm not saying that everybody's got, but when you put, you know, if you just guzzle all this green juice or green powder, there are some potential issues. So
right. And, you know, my rule is if you're going to make a smoothie out of everything, the portion should never be more than what you would actually eat.
Okay.
But I'm a big fan of eat your kale, chew your kale.
Mm-hmm.
Chew and your now they have, swallow your kale.
Now they have wonderful...
You don't have to put it into the NutriBullet and pre-digest it for
right.
it.
Right. Well, now, kale used to be arduous. You know, it used to be you'd have to, steam it and then sauté it like collard greens. Very chewy.
Yeah.
And people find it too bitter. But now they have baby kale, and you can use baby kale either...
In a salad.
You just throw in some. I mean, even if you don't want your whole salad to be kale, you can get a little bit of kale, and that's much preferable to, iceberg lettuce. It's got more nutrients.
Sure.
We have time for one more quick question,
yeah.
So can we fit one in?
Okay. Let's see here. We've got a question from Gail. My MRI indicates I have ruptured discs in my back, and they're pressing on the nerves, causing pain in my hip and my leg.
Ooh.
While waiting to see the surgeon, it was suggested that I take Neurontin. I've not taken any pain meds, and I fear that it will disrupt my natural gut flora and make things worse in the long run. Should I take it, or is there too much at stake? I'm taking probiotics, fish
mm-hmm.
oil, curcumin,
yep.
vitamin D.
Yep. So let me reassure this patient, and this is a good question because this is obviously a purist who's running into trouble, and I think one of the things that I can do in my practice is sometimes signal that it's okay under certain circumstances to take certain medications selectively, because Neurontin, while certainly not a perfect medication, it's a medication that has a lot of side effects. You can feel drowsy and hungover and brain fog from it. But if you're in excruciating pain and it's nerve pain, Neurontin can take the edge off that pain. And I actually just had a similar discussion with the young man who, remember we saw him in the office this week,
yeah.
Who's experiencing a lot of pain. I said, you might try Neurontin or the newer drug, Lyrica. And no, antibiotics disrupt intestinal flora. And
yeah.
But this is just this medication has other potential effects, but it's not about damaging your intestinal flora. I think the biggest problem associated with Neurontin is that the side effects may outweigh the benefits. People just sometimes say, I got some pain relief, but I just felt so drowsy, so schloggy. And the other thing about Neurontin is if you use it chronically, it will cause your appetite to go up and you will gain weight. When you're already in pain, you can't move, and then you take something that increases your appetite, that isn't good. So, we got to be selective about our choices about medication. And no, none of us, especially listeners to Intelligent Medicine, none of us want to take medication. But, unfortunately, there's some circumstances where medication can help, and we just have to be intelligent consumers about making the right choices, because unfortunately many doctors will just push it on you, and you have to be act with discretion about accepting prescriptions.
Best of luck to Gail.
And Gail's on the right tack by taking fish oil. I mean, there are studies that suggest that if you take high-dose fish oil, over time you can sometimes you can certainly ameliorate the pain of disc disease. That's been shown in studies. Dr. Joseph Maroon at University of Pittsburgh, he's been a guest on this program. He's a big advocate of fish oil. He's a neurosurgeon. The guy makes his living operating on people. Well, he did a study on people where he said, look, let's make a deal. Let's wait 6 months, and I'll operate on you in 6 months if you're still in terrible pain. But I want you to take... And I think with some enormous dose of fish oil, excuse me, like 8 or 12 capsules of fish oil daily, and stick to it. And at the end of 6 months, we'll evaluate your pain. Well, there were two groups, one group that got placebo and one group that got fish oil. And the group that got fish oil had a much lower incidence of requiring surgery. Now, some of the people went on to require surgery. Their disc disease was so bad. But other people, through just waiting patiently, taking fish oil and doing proper physical therapy, worked out of a problem. So, sometimes, I got to say that sometimes these problems, even if they appear very bad on an MRI, I think one of the worst things that has happened in back medicine is that we have the advent of MRIs, because when you see something wrong with your back, it appears that, oh, look, this is the cause of the problem, and we have to do a surgical fix. But in some cases, that really is necessary. If you've got a terrible impingement, you know, crushed disc, you know, then surgery might ameliorate the problem. But the vast majority of these problems can be ameliorated with, you know, acupuncture, physical therapy, chiropractic, and, you know, along with the right nutritional support. I'm not saying that fish oil is a miracle drug that makes pain go away, but it does reduce inflammation in the discs and can be part of what works.
Yeah. Gail, we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, you know, you want a little pain relief, you know, try Neurontin or, you know, a newer medication, Lyrica. All right, mm-hmm. That's all the time that we have. Is there anything else we want to message on today's program?
No, I would think that should be it, and I thank everybody for listening to the podcast. And
yeah, I do really want to express a great deal of appreciation to the. I'm extremely gratified, you know, and I got to say this sort of from time to time, you know, I really, you know, settle back and take stock on this phenomenon of what is essentially a relatively new launch. You know, about 2 years ago, we launched the Intelligent Medicine podcast series. Originally, I've
been
doing radio.
Long?
Yeah, it's 2 years.
Wow.
And, you know, I just threw it out there and I said, you know, are people really going to access this information? Or people, you know, or am I just broadcasting into the ether? And the results have been tremendously gratifying. We have now approaching 1.3 million downloads of the Intelligent Medicine podcast and growing. And we're just very appreciative that, you know, with all, you know, it's kind of like the airlines. It's like, we thank you, you know, we know you have a lot of options to fly, and we thank you for flying United, Continental, or, you know, whatever. You know, we know you have a lot of options out there in terms of media. There's just so much out there. And the fact that many of you take, you know, an hour or two or three a week and listen to an Intelligent Medicine podcast is just tremendously gratifying, and we hope that you find par value from these broadcasts and that they fortify you in your mission of health and, you know, for you and your loved ones, your family, and that it's a valuable resource for you. And we are encouraged, and we will continue, and we pledge we're going to get the information out to you as best as we see it. Thanks so much for joining us. And thank you, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Robert Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.